You cannot get what you need unless you know what you need.
Hey, it's Zach here, and super quick before we dive into the show, if you haven't already, I want to make sure that you have subscribed to my free weekly Case of the Mondays newsletter, because it is where I share my best advice, strategies, and mindsets to help you design a creative career that you absolutely love showing up for every Monday morning. When you sign up, I'll even send you a bonus 5-day email course to help you clarify and prioritize the next small steps in your unique path to success. To sign up, just visit optimizeyourself.me/newsletter. All right, on to today's episode. My name is Zach Arnold, and I'm a former Hollywood film and television editor turned career strategist and the creator of Optimize Yourself, where I help artists, creatives, and storytellers just like you design the more balanced, more sustainable, and more fulfilling creative career that you deserve. In a nutshell, I'm Tim Ferriss meets Ted Lasso, minus the mustache, because I am obsessed with both learning everything I can about optimizing human potential while also inspiring you to realize yours. If you are ready to step outside your comfort zone, let's dive right in and unlock the optimized version of you. Hello, and welcome to the Optimize Yourself podcast, where I share honest and candid conversations with best-selling authors, world-class athletes, Hollywood legends, elite experts in a variety of fields, as well as everyday people that are achieving extraordinary things. It means the world to me that with all the podcast choices out there, you have chosen to invest your valuable time, energy, and attention with me. Now, before we get started, don't forget to visit optimizeyourself.me/podcast so you can subscribe, leave a review, and so you can also download your unique customized podcast playlist, where I'm going to send you the 5 best expert interviews from our archives to help you achieve your specific goals. So on that note, without further ado, let's get right to today's guest. I am here today with Dr. Steven Rogelberg, who is an organizational psychologist. He's the Chancellor's Professor at UNC Charlotte and author of the new book, Glad We Met, The Art and Science of One-on-One Meetings. And according to the person that I would consider my own personal Obi-Wan Kenobi of leadership, of relationships, of networking, as well as in organizational psychology, whom is Adam Grant, he says that Steven Rogelberg knows more about how to improve meetings than anyone on earth. Coming from Adam Grant, for those that don't know, that's about as big of an endorsement as you can get. That's like Michael Jordan saying of another basketball player, they're the real deal. You've done keynotes for companies like Google, Facebook, Amazon, Pfizer, Cisco, Bank of America. I could spend the entire call mentioning the list of names, but there's one notable one that I think is going to pique the interest of my audience today, which was Warner Brothers. And I bring that up because, and you can speak to this because you've spoken to many companies, the other people that I've talked to in organizational psychology and leadership, those that have worked in both the corporate space and the entertainment space, say that they've never seen anything more messed up or disorganized in entertainment. I've got that distinctly from Greg McKeown. He's like, Hollywood is a whole different kind of mess, right? So I guess where I want to start today is, first of all, saying immensely appreciative of your time. So thank you for being here.
Oh my gosh, it is such a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
And I am confident in saying that today's meeting could not be an email, but most of them could be. So I guess where I want to start is by answering the quintessential question. Why do meetings suck?
All right. Well, let's just get right into it.
Let's just dive into it, shall we?
So there's lots of reasons why we struggle with meetings. Meetings suck because we often meet just out of habit. We're not intentional. We don't think about why we actually need a meeting. Is the meeting the best vehicle for having this conversation? Because we have a lot of choices. And so we meet out of habit. We meet for the wrong reasons. We over-invite or we under-invite, which is more rare. We don't embrace our role of a facilitator in the meeting. Instead, we do most of the talking. And the more the leader talks, the lower the ratings of meeting effectiveness, to no surprise. We don't have a proper close to the meeting. So people leave going, I don't even know what the heck we just decided. So it's from soup to nuts, a bad design, bad facilitation, and no clarity upon ending.
Yeah. And we could dive into all of those and we'll probably hit quite a few of them. But I think that the one where I want to start is that I think that it applies to meetings, but applies to so many other things that are broken, but are never fixed, is that, well, we've just always done it this way. Right. This is just how we do it. Why is it so hard to change things when we've done them the wrong way for so long?
I love that. And, you know, really, as an organizational psychologist, I'm driven to study pain at work, especially pain where, you know, we just haven't done anything about it. And yet we know it's a problem. And meetings are that perfect combination of pain, yet it's an essential activity. Like, it's really critical. You know, meetings are an evolution in organizational functioning, right? They're an evolution over what we experienced during the Industrial Revolution, where it was all command and control systems. And so meetings, in many regards, are where organizational democracy takes place, right? It's essential for communication, cooperation, coordination, consensus decision-making. So meetings are so important, but we're wallowing in bad ones for three reasons. Do you want me to share these three reasons with you?
Oh, God, yes. Let's just go right into the weeds.
All right. So first of all, leaders think they're not the problem. That when you survey people coming out of a meeting, there is one person who says that was really good. And Zach, can you guess who that one is?
Oh, yeah. It's me right here. CEO, leader, facilitator. Yeah. You have no idea how self-conscious I was preparing for this. I'm like, oh, my God, it's all me. I'm the problem. So, yes, I'm right there with you.
So leaders have a blind spot. So that's relevant, right? So if you have a blind spot, you're not motivated to make changes. You think the problem's with others. So we have a leader blind spot. We also have the reality that organizations actually don't provide any training around meetings. We have found that only around 25% of managers receive training on how to lead a meeting. This is another incredible blind spot. And then the training that does exist is not meaningful. In fact, it doesn't align well with the science. And a good example of that, and we can talk about it more later because I think you're going to be intrigued, is this notion of agendas. The effects of having agendas on meeting quality is minuscule to nothing. And when we really stop and think about it, it's not a surprise. So many agendas are recycled. What matters more is what's on the agenda, who's invited, and how do you facilitate completion of the agenda? That's the hard stuff. This is why in my book, my chapter is called Agendas Are a Hollow Crutch, because sometimes people think they have an agenda, now they're good. So we have a blind spot for the leader. We have a lack of training for the leader. So they just wind up reusing the dysfunctional practices that they themselves have experienced. And number three, there's an organizational blind spot. Namely, if you look at an organization's engagement survey, there's nothing on there around meetings. So here you have this activity that's consuming so much time that you know people are going batty over, and yet as an organization, you're not assessing it. So there's no feedback or accountability at the organizational level. So that's a lot of blind spots, and that's a lot of skill gaps. And those things together just keep leading us to wallow in bad meetings.
There's a lot that I want to dig into, but the first thing that I'm really curious about, because I'm not sure that there's a better person on the planet to ask this question than you, because as I already mentioned, you've straddled between the corporate world and organizational management and at least a little bit from what I can tell in your bio, dabbling in the creative world and in movie studios. When you said that less than 25% of managers and team leaders receive training on meetings, I would venture to guess it's about 0% in Hollywood. Leadership is not prioritized at all because there's no structure. In organizations like Google, Facebook, whatever, there's a vested interest in learning these skills because people come into the company full time and they want to grow as a team. In Hollywood, everything is one project at a time. You're a widget in a machine. You do this job. You do this job. You do this job. Let's just coordinate what needs to get done. Then we go our separate ways and there's no long-term investment or any kind of sense of team culture. And it might be a little bit different at the movie studios themselves, But from my perspective and from the perspective of almost everybody listening, we're on the creative side. We're the editors, the composers, the directors, the writers, and we're just cogs in a machine. So nobody has any concept of how to lead a meeting. And I'm curious if you've noticed anything similar, having worked with so many different companies.
I've definitely worked with a number of organizations in the creativity space. I've worked with another number of media outlets, a lot of organizations that have programmers, game makers, did a lot of that with Google, certainly Warner Brothers, Discover, to name some. So yeah, you're certainly right. The dysfunction across those organizations is apparent when it comes to meetings. But Zach, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Like, I get asked, okay, tell me, Rogelberg, what's the one organization doing this right? Or what's the one sector doing this right? There isn't. This is a universal problem. In fact, one of the things that I get a kick out of talking about in my keynote is that I share some data around what percentage of employees complain about wasted time in meetings. And I give three choices, A, B, or C, and C is like 70% or more employees complain about bad meetings. And I've done these speeches throughout the world. I'm talking, you know, China, Germany, Chile, Mexico. I mean, every continent. Well, not every, but. And it's always C. It's always C. Like, the world is not united on many things. But when it comes to the misery around meetings, like, we are one big family of pain. And every sector is struggling. And what's interesting, though, is getting this right. It's definitely, we know it's going to help individuals and people, but it's critical for the organizations that the data links effectively running meetings and organizational profitability. Is even tied to retention of your top talent. Right? If your top talent, your top designers, your top creatives are wallowing in bad meetings, guess what? They're out of there. They're leaving. So there's not many wonderful things that came out of the pandemic, of course, but one of the wonderful things that did come out of the pandemic is much more interest in the topic of meetings and moving away from just accepting bad meetings as the cost of doing business and more into this perspective of how can we make this competitive advantage.
I want to put a pin in that for a second, because I definitely want to go down the road of how much things have evolved or devolved, depending on your opinion, since the pandemic, because so much is done remotely and technology has either helped or hurt. But what I want to dig into a little bit more first is, if this is a universal issue and it's not a matter of, well, it's Hollywood or it's the tech sector or it's the United States, it seems to me this is more a human problem. What is the universal connectivity between all these things that just makes us universally bad at meetings, just on a human level globally? What do you find is the common threads that make us just so inherently bad at this?
We think that we are really good with people. And if you look at our divorce rates, we're not really good, right? 50% of divorces, 50% of marriages end in divorce. So our ability to engage with and work with, interact with people is just not as good as we think we are at it. And at the same time, we have a false sense of confidence. I mean, think about your line of work, right? So podcasts, you know, why is yours successful and others aren't? That person who's not successful, they think they're just as good as you are. But they're not. What you do is you prepare, right? You think about the conversation. You think about the story. You listen carefully, right? You're engaging in all these behaviors that separate you from those others. But I can't stress enough that those others, they think they're just as good as you. They think they're really good at doing a podcast, but they're not, right? Because you think about it, with the podcast, everyone should think they're good at it. It's just a conversation. But we know that's not the case. And the same applies to meetings. Everyone just thinks that when it comes to having a conversation, yeah, I got the skills for that. I know how to do that. And they don't.
Yeah, I know that I've worked for a multitude of leaders where I was on the receiving end of the meeting, had very little to do with the agenda. And as soon as it starts with, everybody tell us one fun fact about yourself, or let's everybody share what you did on vacation, and there's 12 people on the call, I'm like, shoot me in the head. Like, let me just go do what it is that I meant to do. I understand team building and we want camaraderie, but especially if it's on a Zoom call, just let me do my work. Right. I can't be alone and feeling that way.
Oh, you're not. I have an alternative to that, by the way. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yes, let's hear it.
So first of all, you're completely correct. This idea of being on a Zoom and telling people, hey, let's go around, everyone say what they did this weekend, is horrible. People can't stand. And it actually serves no purpose because there's no meaningful connection that's achieved that way. And, you know, when we think about the pandemic, what people miss was genuine connection. Right? That's what we were longing for. And so an alternative approach to what you described is that as people enter into your Zoom meeting, if it's doing virtual, obviously all of this can be done, any package and in person, is you actually, right when they come in, you assign them to a breakout with one other person. And they're assigned with this one other person for just 2 or 3 minutes to have a conversation. And then they come back and the meeting starts. But the beauty of this approach is it's only 2 minutes and it's real. It's a real conversation. It's not a BS conversation. It's you being able to connect with someone else. And even if it's just 2 or 3 minutes, at least it's real and genuine. And every time I have a meeting, we randomly assign you to someone else. So over time, you're starting to build some of these relationships. This is akin to when you walk into a meeting room and you look to your right or you look to your left and you have a person there and you start talking. But it's genuine. It's a real conversation.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. This was a conversation that I'd had with one of my team members, who's actually my podcast producer. So she's on with us currently. But she had said to me, it was like a year or two ago, one of the things that I put out to my team specifically, and just for a sense of context, it's a very small team. It grew from first just me to then me and two other people, and now there's about 10 of us. But I said that it is very important to me that we develop the skill of meeting and communicating. And this is something that I want to get better at, but I suck at it right now, and I know very little about it. So we spent the last year really trying to figure it out and work out the kinks.
Yeah.
And her suggestion was, and this, she was very right about this. She's like, you're very agenda driven, very action. Let's talk about next steps, actions. Here are the jobs. She's like, what if we just spent the first 10 or 15 minutes and we just shared with each other? So we had human connection, and the intent behind it was great, but we kind of fell into that hole of, well, it's 15 minutes of just sharing this, that, or the other thing. I guarantee we're going to try this one-on-one thing, because I think that this is great.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's so much better. Because 15 minutes, that's a lot of time. If you're a leader and you want to build the connective tissue among your team members, create a strategy for that. Let's think about it, right? Meetings are a small part of that, but there's lots of other things that can be brought to bear if you're trying to build this sense of team and cohesion. And so many leaders just fall into this trap that, oh yeah, my meetings are the mechanism for building cohesion. That's misguided. In fact, and I think I know you'll appreciate this because I know you have an athletic background. You know, one of the things with cohesion is cohesion often follows from success. So if you have a team or a meeting that excels, guess what happens? People like each other. Being really productive fosters cohesion. So this idea of taking 10 to 15 minutes away from getting stuff done, I'm not as keen on it. I'd rather, you know, do this shorter 2 or 3 minute intervention, have a fabulous meeting where you kick butt, and then you're building cohesion through that. And then as part of your long-term, you know, plan, say, okay, how can I build the most cohesive team I have? And what could that look like? And what strategy will I have? And be intentional and purposeful with it.
Yeah, I love all of that. And what that made me think of is that, and I'm glad you brought up sports, because I've always been so interested, not so much in the actual sport, in the athletics of it, or even in the players on the team. I'm such a nerd in that ever since I was a kid, either all the major sports teams or the major like sports or, you know, iconic movies, I was always more interested in the coach. Like when I've talked about ad nauseum about how the Karate Kid was my Star Wars and I ended up working on Cobra Kai as, you know, like my dream job. I was always way more interested in Mr. Miyagi's philosophies than Daniel. When I watched Miracle, way more interested in the coach and the Kurt Russell character than the team. Hoosiers, obsessed with Gene Hackman. I don't even remember the players' names, but I loved the Gene Hackman character. So I've Definitely. Always been interested in leadership. And whenever people would look at successful like football teams, I was really into football for years. Everybody underestimates the power of the locker room and the culture in the locker room and how that makes such a difference in winning or losing. And that's one of the things that I've really zeroed in on is now that I'm building more of a team rather than just, and I fell into this trap as a solopreneur transitioning to building a team. Well, I've got a really long to-do list. Now I have more people, so I'm going to outsource my to-do list, right? And that just wasn't working. And essentially the meeting was a faster way of outsourcing tasks and to-do lists. And then I realized, well, that doesn't work. And it was more about how do I delegate authority and use meetings to solve problems? So working in Hollywood as an editor or as a creative, I've seen so many horrible meetings where you literally have every department head. So you have like 50 people on the call and it's a disjointed mess and it's 2.5 hours and nothing gets done versus you get 3, 4, 5 people on a call and it's about let's solve a problem together. And my team and I hope, and again, I hope that the leadership blind spot isn't there because my team might be on this call and say, oh God, our meetings suck. So I could be wrong. But now what I've done is I've structured it around a question. Here's a problem to solve. Anybody can jump on the call that feels that they have a relevant solution. So we as a team can solve this problem. And now I love our meetings. They're so much fun. So I want to, oh, go ahead.
No, I mean, that's one of the things I talk about in my my research. And by the way, before I forget, when you're talking about fostering connection, one of the greatest ways of doing it is through one-on-one meetings. And I know we're going to talk about that because that's the one meeting that people actually want more of, not less of. So we'll get back to that. So you were mentioning...
Well, I was talking about the idea of how we were structuring meetings around solving problems. And I actually, I'm going to also, we can use this to roll into the concept of the one-on-one. Because I think I maybe it wasn't a mistake, but I made what I thought was the mistake of it only being one-on-one meetings. The only two options were everybody on the team on the same call, or it was one-on-one. And I realized I'm having the same conversation 5 times. And for this problem, whether it's podcast content or it's, you know, course content, I was having the same conversations and nobody was talking to each other. So it was all silos. But I think I've thrown the baby out with the bathwater where now it's all either full team meeting, it's small groups working on a problem, but we've kind of not eliminated, but we've removed a large part of the one-on-ones. So let's talk about, because you said earlier, meetings are essential. And I think a lot of people that don't understand meetings would say, no, they're not. It can all be done via Slack and email. So let's talk about why meetings are essential when they work and this idea of one-on-ones versus small groups and how to structure them. My sincerest apologies for the interruption, but if you're a creative professional who spends long hours at your workstation, not only is the following promo not an interruption, but listening has the potential to change your life. Because working with a topo mat underneath you at a height-adjustable workstation is a game changer. Let's learn a little bit more from ErgoDriven co-founder and CEO Kit Perkins, creator of the topo mat.
The topo mat is the first anti-fatigue mat designed specifically for standing desks. The real benefit of a standing desk is movement. We found bringing in this cushioned terrain under your feet, your brain just subconsciously engages and you wander around and you get that movement at the standing desk that you need without even having to think about it at all.
People will come to me at an event or a panel and they'll say, I got the topo mat because of you. Even when they had a mat, once they used this one, it was a total game changer.
We've just heard time and time again that with topo, we've kind of hit the sweet spot that it's the right premium quality materials and a right shape that people are actually getting benefit out of this stuff.
You spend more time here than anywhere if you do creative work the way that I do. So I would rather be driving around in a Ferrari than a Ford Pinto. And I feel like this is the Ferrari of the standing mat.
One of the things you don't realize is that at a standing desk, your main interface to the world, your body's main interface to the world is the ground. If you're going to invest in anything at that Ferrari level, it should be what you're standing on.
Well, my goal is that for anybody that is a creative professional like myself that's stuck in front of a computer for inordinate amounts of time of their waking life, they're doing it standing on a tilt couple, Matt. So you and I, my friend, one edit station at a time are going to change the world.
I like it. That's a utopian vision I can get on board with.
If you're a creative professional looking for a simple and affordable way to stay active, energetic, and focused while spending long hours at your height-adjustable workstation, I can't stress enough how important it is to have the right mat underneath you, which is why I continue to share the Topo Mat as my number one product recommendation. To learn more about the Topo Mat and purchase yours, visit optimizeyourself.me/topo. That's T-O-P-O.
Okay, so first, I want to, before I forget, one of the things that I talk about, and I'm really happy to hear that you do this, is a new innovation in agendas. So as opposed to structuring them as a set of topics to be discussed, frame your agenda as a set of questions to be answered. And by doing so, now you have to really think, right? You have to think about why. Why are you having this meeting to solve these questions? You have a better sense of who to invite. They're relevant to the questions. You have a better sense of whether the meeting's successful. The questions have been answered. By having your agenda framed as questions, you now create an engaging challenge that draws people in. And if you just can't think of any questions, it likely means you don't need a meeting. So this agenda as questions approach is fabulous. It's a simple intervention that can yield tremendous results. Now, some other things, you're absolutely correct. Leaders have a variety of different communication choices that they can make. I mean, obviously, there's team meetings. You know, there's tons of asynchronous opportunities. So many leaders, especially with creatives, have fabulous success, you know, having basically this asynchronous document for each of their people. And, you know, people pose questions, they get answers, there's this dialogue, it provides this connective fiber between, you know, the various meetings. It becomes documentation when you have performance appraisals or what have you. So the use of asynchronous documents are great. It's a great way of having a meeting. And the added bonus is it doesn't interrupt your workflow, which is a real common issue for creatives, right? Because people can access their async document when it's convenient. Related to this, some leaders, you know, if they need to just create some one-way announcements, instead of scheduling a meeting, they do a little podcast with themselves. They record themselves. It's so easy to do. And then they send it out and they let people listen at their own time, right? So many people, and in particular creatives, you know, they crave uninterrupted blocks of time. And as leaders, we can promote that through the various communication vehicles that we choose to use. Like, we can be much more sensitive to that. So that's an easy intervention. But circling back to that other piece, one-on-ones, which is obviously, you know, that's the core of my new book, Glad We Met, The Art and Science of One-on-One Meetings. Those meetings, they're so different than the other ones, right? One-on-one meetings is the one type of meeting that should not be an email. It's the one type of meeting that employees want more of, not less of. In fact, our research shows that what employees desire is having these weekly, which I think is really interesting. And this was a cross-cultural global study. What was also interesting is senior leaders, counter to generational stereotypes, actually wanted the most one-on-ones, because they recognize, right, how valuable contact is with your manager. So these one-on-ones are this opportunity to truly connect with your manager. They're orchestrated and facilitated by the manager, but it's not for them. It's for the direct. It's that one predictable time every week or every other week where that direct knows they have you, that they can bring up what's on their minds and have a discussion with you about it. And the role of the leader is not to jump in there and necessarily rescue or solve, but just to ask good questions and, you know, provide counsel when it fits. But these one-on-ones can truly elevate employee experience. We all know the adage that people don't leave bad jobs, they leave bad bosses. Well, one-on-ones are your opportunity to prove you're not a bad boss. And I get asked often whether one-on-ones are optional. They're not. They're required This is literally where leadership takes place. This is your stage for leadership. So one-on-ones are critical for promoting employee engagement and success, but it's also good for your success as a leader, right? We're evaluated by the success of those that report into us. And so as our team members and team thrives, so do we. Furthermore, what's generally been found is that when managers have regular one-on-ones with their people, they actually have less interruptions between meetings. So they have more uninterrupted time, right? So this is good for the leader. It's good for the team members and the team. It's foundational to your inclusion efforts. And I'll add that it's also just good for your well-being and health. One of the best predictors of life satisfaction is helping others. And one-on-ones are your opportunity to show up for someone else, to truly see them.
I have a very unique perspective in that I can look at this from two diametrically opposed angles. The first of which is you said the creatives desperately crave focused blocks of creative time where they're uninterrupted. Oh my God, that is the story of my life. And the reason why, as an individual creative working as a team where I am in a cog in a machine, do not tell me when to meet. Do not constantly say, did you check your email? Did you get this message? You didn't hire me to answer emails and be in meetings. You hired me to edit this show or whatever the job might be, right? So that was always the way that I saw meetings for most of my career. Then all of a sudden I transitioned to the leader. And I said to myself, well, I want to meet with all my team so I know what they're up to. But the slant that I took, I think I'm doing some things right with the one-on-ones, but I want to dig into this a little bit deeper. I said to them, I want you to bring the agenda. This is not me telling you what to do. Think of me as your coach, right? I work for you in these meetings. So it's your responsibility to come with questions, challenges, and I want to coach you through it. So I think that for the meetings themselves, maybe they're not as awful as I think they are, or again, maybe I have the blind spot. Yeah. Here's what really hit me though, and this is still the kind of the rock and the hard place that I'm between. And I can't imagine a better person on the planet to solve this problem than you. I'm also still a creative. I still want to be able to write, or I want to be able to do whatever, you know, content development I'm doing, or I still have a creative job on the side, right? So what I have found is that now as the leader, like as we talked about from a communication perspective, doing only one-on-ones created silos and a lack of communication between people working on the same project. Setting that aside, I found that I am in meetings all day long and I never get anything done. So that was one of the reasons that I said we need to find a different way to meet, because I'm the bottleneck, because the creative work I'm responsible for, I can't get done because I'm always doing one-on-one meetings. What's the sweet spot? What's the middle ground to make them work, but not sap up all of my time or my team's time?
Yeah. So there, I have two quick responses. One is start using asynchronous more, because that will free up some time. So start looking for ways of having more asynchronous conversations with your folks. You know, second, just be much more intentional with how you place these things on your calendar. You know, you should lock up certain number of hours each day for your creative work. That's not a negotiable. If you don't respect that time, why would you expect anyone else to respect that time? So if you think it's important, schedule it, book it. And when you're scheduling meetings with your team, you know, basically the ideal, and this can be all through conversations, is once you have a better sense of how each team member wants to schedule their meetings, then, you know, you have this working model so that, you know, if you want to respect Bill's time, that he generally prefers meeting in the morning. That's great. Now you know that. And you could take that into consideration. So start having these conversations around what are people's preferred meeting schedules and make note of it. But that doesn't mean that you give up your scheduled creative time. But those two things together, holding sacred your creative time and being more intentional with your scheduling of meetings, that will generally allow you some blocks of time to get into flow, which is critical. Now, initially, people thought that only creatives would benefit from getting into flow, but that's not the case. All humans benefit from flow. All humans benefit from uninterrupted time. And then furthermore, I do want to say that when I've worked with creatives and programmers and such, they are fine with meetings if they're good. They know that they do need some meetings. What they rebel against is bad meetings that keep interrupting them from doing their jobs. But if they're well-placed good meetings, people are good with it. Like, they get it. They get it's important that they're not working in complete isolation. So that additional attentionality with scheduling using the asynchronous. And then I would also add, in your case, Zach, that I would look to decrease your meeting times. You know, we know from the research that there's something that exists called Parkinson's Law. And this is the idea that work expands to fill whatever time's allotted to it. So if you schedule a meeting for 60 minutes, it will take 60 minutes. But we can use this to our advantage, right? We can schedule meetings for 45 minutes, for 35 minutes, for 25 minutes. And Parkinson's Law suggests that we will still get it done. So let's play with more aggressive meeting times. And if they're not working for us, we can increase, right? So now, you know, I get asked to do a lot of different consultations and meetings, as you would suspect. And my typical MO is when someone tells me a time, I'm like, nah, let's try to do it in 15. And if it doesn't work, we can always find more time. But 90% of the time, we're done. We're done. So I think those three approaches can help to give you some of the uninterrupted time for flow that you crave.
Yeah, I love all of that. And it tells me that I think maybe I'm on the right track, because the aha moment that I and my team had recently was that I have a very specific amount of time where I make myself available to my students, literally called office hours, just like if I were a professor at a university, where Tuesday and Thursday mornings, you click this button, you get 20 minutes just one-on-one with me, I solve a problem. And I said, what if I did that with us as a team? So they can go onto a calendar and say, from 11:30 to 12 on Wednesday, I want to solve this problem. Great. But I am now blocking out more of that time for me to be the creative and not the manager. And that's made a big difference. When it comes to Parkinson's Law, this is actually a concept that I teach to my students in my program, because we have a whole time management department. So one of the things that I just kind of want to add for the listeners that have never heard this, I've actually renamed this principle, not officially. I call it the mother-in-law principle, which is that if you know your mother-in-law is coming to your house in 3 hours, it takes you exactly 2 hours and 59 minutes to clean your house. It doesn't mean that maybe it'll take half a day or a day, however long you think it's going to take to clean your house. If she arrives in 3 hours, it takes you 2 hours and 59 minutes to clean your house, right? Meetings work the same way. Allotting time to write a chapter of a book or cut a scene. If you really shorten that time, you can kind of gamify how quickly and how efficiently can I actually get through this.
I love it. You're saying so many good things, candidly. I love what you said about the one-on-ones. You absolutely nailed it. How you described it for yourself is all, I mean, that's what emerged from the research is the best approach. It's not your time. It's not the time for status updates, right? As leaders, managers, we have the power. We can schedule a million meetings with people if we need to check in with them. So we have that ability. I hope we don't, but we have that ability. Mm-hmm. This is just one of those opportunities for the employee, right? This is that one time that they can share what's on their minds. And our job as a manager is to really encourage them to think broadly about what they could talk about, right? So they could talk about their jobs. They could talk about their teams. They could talk about the broader organization. They can talk about personal issues that impact work. They can think short-term. They can think long-term, you know, AKA like career stuff. So as a manager, we want to prime them to think differently. Because if we don't do that, typically what employees do when they go into one-on-ones is they give you what you want to hear, right? So they'll start doing a status update because they think that's what you want. So we just need to reaffirm that this is not about monitoring work. We can do that a million different ways. This is about focusing on what's on your minds, you know, what's taking up real estate in that brain of yours, and let's try to work through it. I also want to go back to something that's come up a few times, but I want to label it more explicitly, which is I want leaders to start having meetings about meetings. Now, I know people will make fun of me for that, but holy crap, like how are we not having a meeting about meetings? If you know your people are spending all this time in it and they're miserable, how could you justify not talking about it? And so if we have a problem at work and we want to fix it, it's not going to go away on its own. We have to talk about it. So yeah, managers actually need to start talking to their people about how to make these things truly work for them, right? How to make sure that meetings don't prevent them from being creative, right? Let's start talking about this. I'm not talking about filling your schedule with meetings about meetings, but as we move into 2024, if we want to chart out a new future of work from a meetings collaboration perspective that is actually positive, it's not going to magically happen. We have to have a conversation around it.
Oh my God. It's so hilarious that you said this. I'm feeling so much less self-conscious than I did 40 minutes ago. My entire team, I sent them a message, a multitude of messages. And I said, we're going to slow everything down for the rest of the year for November and December. And you guys can make fun of me all you want. We are going to be having multiple meetings about meetings because I want to figure out meetings. We're going to talk about them, what works, what doesn't work. How do we restructure them? How do we make them work for us? And I'm like, oh my God, I must look like I'm so disorganized having meetings about meetings. And the only thing worse than a meeting is a meeting about meeting, right? I feel so much better about all the things that we've been doing. I'm way less self-conscious than I was.
I think you have fabulous instincts. I really do. I feel like I'm talking to a brother from another mother.
I love it.
I definitely feel like your instincts are right. And I think this idea of telling your team, I want to have a meeting about our meetings, is such a good reflection on you, right? Because we know people are miserable. So why be tone deaf with it? Let's go after what's making people miserable and say, let's try new things. And after a few months, we'll take a look at them again. And if it's not working, we'll figure it out. And interestingly, in the world of IT and, you know, infrastructure, that's a smaller investment than meetings. Meetings are more expensive than your entire IT. And yet IT, we assign a staff around it, right? We have a chief technology officer. We have surveys around it. We absolutely have meetings, whether our IT is doing what we need it to do. So we recognize that our IT is this tremendous investment and we want to make sure we get a return on it. And yet in the world of meetings, we just assume that that same process and practices are not necessary.
I have spent almost 10 years now raving about how much I love my Topomat. And I have finally discovered what I now consider the Topomat of desk chairs, the Core 360. The Core 360, spelled Q-O-R, is designed to keep me constantly moving while seated in an upright and balanced position. To learn more about how it works, let's hear from Core 360 founder, Dr. Turner Osler, about why he created the Core 360 active sitting chair.
When you sit badly for many hours a day, and that's really what the problem is. It's very hard to make yourself get up and do jumping jacks every half hour. But if you just swap to a chair that requires you to be muscularly engaged in order not to fall off, it's an easy bar to clear.
For the procrastinators out there who hear all of the statistics and know how bad sitting is and it's the new smoking and they're thinking, that's something I'll worry about in a few decades, you're gonna feel the effects of having more energy at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 4 o'clock in the afternoon that day.
And that's the whole point. Your core muscles will be stronger, you'll have less back pain. All of this will make you more available for the rest of the pursuits of your life, your kids, your hobbies, your whatever.
For those of us who need to practically live in front of computers to do our best creative work, the Core 360 is going to level up your game. Keep your body moving and keep the creativity flowing. To learn more and purchase what I consider to be the Topomat of desk chairs, please go to optimizeyourself.me/core360. That's optimizeyourself.me/QOR360. Well, I think that I could talk just about the concept or the idea of agendas, one-on-one meetings, how to get the most out of that interaction. But the area that I want to zoom into next, which I think number one is an area where I'm struggling a little bit, but is also an area that I think is a lot more beneficial for those that are the individual creatives that want to start figuring out how do we implement this, is how to conduct a good asynchronous meeting. So let me break down kind of the way that I'm looking at it right now, and you can poke holes in my thinking. But I see it in this idea, by the way, of doing an announcement video that was brilliant. I'm already thinking like I could do a status update every week. Here's what we're working on. Here are the things to know. And I don't even need to meet about. I love that idea. So I'm already going to start doing that. But I see there's a couple of different modes of communication, one of which we use Slack. It doesn't matter if it's Slack or Teams or whatever, but I see Slack as just kind of like nudges, like a knock on the door. But as far as this is a conversation that we need to access later, that's a resource that's more detailed, I tell them don't put it in Slack. Or if you do, it needs to live somewhere else, which for now is Google Docs. Could be Google Docs, could be Notion. What I don't want to talk about is the technology. This won't be Notion versus Trello versus Asana. But help me and help everybody else understand how to organize the concept or the logic of an asynchronous meeting, because I feel like I'm still kind of struggling with this one.
Sure. It can look like a lot of different things. So there's not a single way. So we're not going to uncover, like, this is the magic way of doing it. And I'm a big believer in creating support systems like async that just fit you as a person. So there's a few approaches that people have found successful, which, by the way, you know, this is why the new book, The Glad We Met, you know, I signaled that in the title, right? The art and science, because when it comes to one-on-ones, there really is a lot of art to it. So the science helps, but there is an art. My first book, The Surprising Science of Meetings, that was really about dumping the evidence so people can start making better choices. There wasn't as much art involved. So when I think about asynchronous, the approaches that I've seen leaders experience the most success, one is framing this asynchronous by date and key questions. And then, you know, so here's the key question I have. And there's this running dialogue and these questions just kind of accumulate over time. A second approach is, here are my key priorities. Here's what's going on with each one of them. Here's where I'm struggling, running into issues, and allows you to immediately plug in some responses or comments. So that's a second approach. And obviously, the first two approaches can be merged. A third approach is more of a template-based approach, where you basically say, okay, in a one-on-one, you know, we can talk about things related to your job. We can talk about things related to the team. So we basically structure our template. And I have some models in the new book too that people can just take. So you structure the asynchronous document almost like this template. It's labeled, this is, you know, week X. And then people fill this in, implied or various questions that you'll chart into. And then basically you're able to leaf back through this asynchronous document and find the story that exists for that individual. And you're able to keep making the connections to what's been in the past. So those three approaches, I think people have found great success with. I do want to share a bonus, is that depending on your approach, let's say that you're the asynchronous is really about identifying, you know, the key actions that emerge from one-on-ones, indicating what status and progress you've made. This stuff can actually just be thrown into an AI. And AI does a fabulous job content analyzing notes over a long period of time. So you could put in the story of that employee, right? Looking at those notes and telling your AI to identify the themes that emerge from it. And then it's going to do a fabulous job. And then that could become the corpus of material for your annual, your every 6 month performance appraisals. So these asynchronous documents could just be so incredibly effective for, you know, just managing your people in a way that is less disruptive.
I hadn't thought about the AI angle. One of the things that we're working on as a team right now is taking Tiago Forte's concept of a second brain, but using it specifically for team communication. And we had talked about, well, right now we're looking into Notion, but again, this isn't about the tools. This is about the psychology of it. Yep. I said that I want our meetings to be a resource. If we have a great conversation about problem solving this issue, we're going to have this problem a year from now. I don't want to have the same conversation. I want to be able to go back and find the AI summary of the notes or whatever. But I never thought to myself, the comprehensive overview of a long string of conversations, that's a whole new level that I hadn't considered. And I'm just geeking out on that idea right now. So we're going to double down on all of that. But the other thing that I took away from this, and then there's one other area that I want to get into that we put a pin into. But this idea of having somebody on your team, like an IT leader, that's a meeting leader, I've now already thought to myself, I know who I'm going to delegate to this, to them. And your job is to improve the quality of our meetings. Right. And if for the most part, I thought as well, that's my job. But if meeting about meetings, like that's something that I have a great person on the team to delegate that to. But it never occurred to me where there's so many department heads, but there isn't like a meeting and communication department head.
I know. Right. It's fascinating. You know, as you said in the intro, I've been very fortunate. I've worked with a ton of organizations. And what's telling is that my clients, you know, they could be the chief operations officer, it can be the CIO, it could be the chief talent officer, it could be the chief human resource officer. There's so many people. And there's not a theme. There's not a clear theme. And because no one owns meetings, no one owns collaboration. And we need that. We need someone to say, yeah, I got this. I'm raising my hand. I'm going to be a person that will monitor it. I'll keep looking for software to make us better. I'll keep helping to think of systems that provide feedback and accountability. And I'll keep working with the CEO to make sure we're fully realizing the potential of this. And that's actually an exciting role. You know, again, if you go back to the amount of time people are spending in this, how do we not have this? Like, it just seems natural. And there are some, I know you're not getting into tools, but I do want to give one plug to this Canadian company called Kairos. And they are creating this awesome plugin that basically just allows people to, you know, monitor their meeting activity. It creates a dashboard for the, like a chief meeting officer to better monitor the situation. But it's just a kind of a plugin that can work with Outlook. And they're releasing their new products come January. And that could just be another opportunity for organizations to start trying to get their arms around the investment they're making in meetings.
How do you spell Kairos for anybody listening? Just so we can put it in the show notes.
Sure. K-A-I-R-O-S.
Excellent. We're going to put that in the show notes. I could probably do an entire conversation with you for an hour just about that, but I want to be very respectful of your time. I got two more quick things I want to get into.
All right.
One of which is I want to go back to something that I put a pin into very early in the conversation, which is this idea of how the pandemic forces us to realize this is a priority. And we don't have to go too deep into that, but I guess the place to start is there seem to be two diametrically opposed viewpoints on all levels, from workers all the way to top CEOs like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, which is that remote work has become so much less productive and meetings and collaboration have suffered. And there are others that say, oh my God, this is so much better with remote work. We collaborate more. We've been forced to learn meetings. What have you learned over the last 3 years about how remote work has changed the way we meet and communicate?
What we know about remote work, because we've actually collected data on this for decades, this is not new, is that people are more productive on their individual tasks when they work at home, on average. We also know that on average, people who work remotely are more engaged. That flexibility is something that people cherish. With that said, that does not mean that people shouldn't be coming to work. There are things that are special around coming into a place, having spontaneous interactions with people, spontaneous engagements. There is something, little sparks of creativity that happen when you're just out at lunch with someone. So there's value of working remotely and there's value of working around other people. And so the challenge is just to find the right balance of that, depending on your industry, where your people are located. But this is another one of those things that, you know, what I tell leaders is, you know, instead of trying to say, yeah, okay, let's have 2 days here, 3 days there, or 1 day here, like come up with a broader philosophy. Like, what is the values that, what goals are you trying to achieve as an organization? And then think about how your meeting strategy and place of work can help feed into those. You know, what people find frustrating is this thought of just a CEO saying, okay, now we're going to try this. Now we're going to try that. Now we're going to go back to this. Like, that's really frustrating because it doesn't seem intentional or purposeful. And so to the extent the CEO says, okay, as a company, these are our values. As a company, we're trying to inspire this type of innovation. We're trying to respect, you know, individual productivity. So it's We're charting our strategy for place to what our ultimate goals are. And people will find comfort in that, knowing that this is part of something bigger. And then, you know, when if people do come back, or when they do come back, coming back to work should not just be being in a bunch of meetings. Like, that's not what people missed about work, right? They missed the more casual interactions, those quick conversations, those quick walks. And so we want to make sure that when people come back to work, they're near the people they need to be nearer. They are having all kinds of informal interactions, and they have lots of degrees of freedom to explore these relationships. So innovation, creativity, unexpected collaborations can emerge.
All of that sounds great, but what about the guys like me that are thinking, I don't have in-person space, and I've got team members in Arizona, in Argentina, in the Philippines, in Thailand, down the block for me. Like, so for me, I very much see the value in a certain level of in-person communication. The lunchroom, the water cooler, yeah, those do have real value.
Yep.
Is there anything that I can do about that, given I have no physical space and it would be impossible to bring my team together?
Well, impossible to bring them together for some type of retreat?
Well, let's say impossible to bring together on a consistent, regular basis.
That's fine.
Like once a week, once a month, that would be cost prohibitive. For a retreat, that's different. So yeah, go on.
All right. So to me, that could be a key part of the strategy, where you have people gather as an organization, be it every 6 months or a year. You're more intentional with, you know, fostering some mentoring. So when you have a new employee come in, you know, you connect them with someone, with a variety of folks in their team and outside of their team, so that they start having some of these regular conversations. You have a program where that rotates over time, so they're meeting more people. So if you have that physical contact, you have that intentionality with regard to assigning people, you know, partners, and you start stressing that you want people to start making these relationships. So for example, one organization I work with, you know, basically started having lunches where, let's say, you know, Zach would make sure that he has a lunch with Steven once every week on Zoom, has a lunch with someone else, you know, every other week on Zoom. So we're just together, right? And it's not necessarily a gender. We're just having lunch, but we're together. And so we can think of a variety of different tools that we can access. But if we have that one time where everyone's come together and you're really good at planning that time, that creates this lovely foundation. And then you want to just make sure that your other informal systems between those gatherings are in place. And next thing you know, you have a sense of team.
I love it. And that's a big thing for us, is we're really doubling and tripling down on team culture. That's one of the great things about a startup, is that even though we have very little financial flexibility and we're still all trying to figure it out, we've said from the beginning, we would rather move slowly, but intentionally and deliberately. And we want to build around a solid team and build around character and skills, not just who's the all-star in this one department and they come in and build funnels, or they can build course content. It's team cohesion and culture are important, but man, am I impatient, and I really like it all to just gel and work and all of our meetings to be perfect. But we've really doubled down on making sure it's about team culture and communication. And this idea of, I love this idea of like having a regularly scheduled kind of informal Zoom lunch. Yeah. And also I want to figure out how to do some form of an in-person meeting, you know, once or twice a year, certainly not on a regular basis with people globally. But with the few minutes that we have left, because I want to be very respectful of your time, I've hijacked so much of this conversation for my own personal selfish needs. I want to go back for a second, specifically from the perspective of those that are listening, that are the individual creatives that are part of a team, especially those that are working in Hollywood or other creative industries that are adjacent to it. If they're listening to this, like I would have been 5 years ago before I ran my own team, thinking this is all great, but what the hell am I going to do about this? Because I'm the one that's stuck in these meetings with people that don't have training in leadership or how to conduct a meeting. What do we do to start changing this from the ground up?
That's such a good question. And that's the heart of why there's so much frustration around meetings. Because ultimately, when we're called to a meeting, we're pretty much relinquishing our power and we're giving it to someone else. And they often don't treat it well, right? when we give someone our time, that's one of our most precious commodities. And people seem to be very cavalier, and that frustrates the heck out of us. And that's also why we often multitask in meetings to try to reclaim our power. So let me answer the question two ways. In the world of regular meetings, there's very little that team attendees can do if you're not the leader. But I want to highlight a few. First of all, you can make sure that you're a model attendee, right? So make sure your house is in order. Are you keeping your contributions succinct? Are you listening carefully to other people? Are you focused? Are you engaged? So make sure that you are modeling the behaviors that you're hoping to see in others. That's one. Number two is that you can engage in shadow facilitation. So there's nothing that stops you during the meeting from saying, hey, you know, I know Zach was working on X. Maybe Zach, did you have any thoughts around this? Or, you know, Lisa was, Lisa, did you want to share? So we can engage in some of these shadow facilitation behaviors, right? We can even make suggestions casually that, hey, could we spend more time on X because it's so important to where we're going next, right? So we have some of these shadow facilitation behaviors that can help. And then C, number three. Number three is remember the horrible feeling you have being in a bad meeting and swear to not be part of the problem. Right, we can all find some meeting that we lead. So harness that discomfort and swear to yourself that you're not going to cause that upon anyone else. So those are the three things from our general meetings. Now, in the one-on-one space, I'll just highlight one thing. And because I know we're running out of time, I want to highlight one thing. Is that as a direct report going into a one-on-one, you cannot get what you need unless you know what you need. You just can't get what you need unless you know what you need. So before you go into that one-on-one, really reflect. Think carefully about what types of information, guidance, counsel would be helpful. Be genuine, be appropriately vulnerable. If you don't do those things, then the manager will just take those as cues that they should just be asking about status of various projects. So that's an issue. That's something that's squarely in our court. But the more we give that thought, the more passionate we are around trying to get those needs met. You know, you start the meeting as a direct saying, I'm so happy we're having this meeting. You know, I have these really pressing issues. I'm just so glad. Thank you for finding the time. Boy, what a wonderful way of starting an engagement.
I would say that's not only great advice for meetings, that's great advice for life. You can't ask for what you need unless you know what you need. I mean, we could get very existential about that, but man, is that great advice. And I cannot advise enough how much people really should think about that much deeper and much further, because we've been told what we're supposed to need. And a lot of times it's not in alignment with what we really need.
That's right.
I've gotten through about 3% of my notes for today's conversation, but I want to be very, very respectful of your time. Well, this was immensely valuable. I'm sharing the raw link to this recording with my entire team by this afternoon. Okay. And hopefully we'll get this out to my audience very, very quickly. But in the meantime, for anybody that wants to learn more, whether it's to go directly to find your book or to connect with you, what is the best place to send people?
Thank you. I would say my website. I have a very strong LinkedIn presence as well. So certainly you can find me on LinkedIn. And that's just under my name, Stephen Rogelberg. And then my website, stephenrogelberg.com, stephenrogelberg.com. And I have so many resources that I put on there for folks to download. Obviously, there's links to my new book, The Glad We Met, The Art and Science of One-on-One Meetings. I hope people will check it out. I do want to say, I'm so passionate around getting this content out there because I know it can really help people. I'm donating all my author royalties to the American Cancer Society because that's just much more important for me to get it out. And so buy the book if you want to level up your one-on-one meeting skills, or buy the book if you want to help eradicate cancer. Either way.
I love it.
Just great.
Tremendous amount of respect for all that. And tremendous gratitude for the time that you've prioritized in your life today to share with both me and with my audience. So, Stephen, I wish you the best of luck and can't thank you enough for everything that you brought to me and my audience today. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Zach. And you did a fabulous job. Your questions are great. I really appreciate your preparation, your facilitation. It was a meaningful conversation. Thanks to you.
Well, that means a lot to me. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for investing both your time and energy listening to today's show. If you were inspired by this conversation, don't forget to subscribe in your podcast app of choice, and most importantly, leave a review, because that helps move the show to the top of iTunes and get our message out there to those who need it the most. Simply visit optimizeyourself.me/subscribe to never miss another episode. Lastly, stay safe, healthy, sane, and most importantly, be well. One last thing before I lose you. If you haven't already, I want to make sure that you've subscribed to my free weekly Case of the Mondays newsletter, because it is where I share my best advice, strategies, and mindsets to help you design a creative career that you absolutely love showing up for every Monday morning. When you sign up, I'm even going to send you a bonus 5-day email course to help you clarify and prioritize the next small steps in your unique path to success. To sign up, just visit optimizeyourself.me/newsletter, and I will see you in your inbox.